The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. I think I killed Sean. Something killed Sean over there.
No,
was it the P.J. Tucker reference we had during the break? Yeah. Make sure you're watching on Twitch because the conversation does not stop during the commercial breaks. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. It's myself, at Sack by BMAC on Twitter, at RHasNoJ on Twitter, and at Sean A. Mapes, plus our man behind the glass, Josh, which is at I am J Chevy. Did I get that right? I thought I got that right. All right, let's quickly get into some Texans topics before we get back into some baseball. And maybe I think we might talk Fast and Furious 10 here later in the show because Sean is...
It's the last 30 Sean minutes if I'm running things.
Sean, to use a wrestling term, Sean is a huge mark for the Fast and Furious series. So,
hey.
Some NFL predictions came out from Will Brinson of CBS Sports. And I think it was a little optimistic for the Houston Texans. Not that I don't have any optimism, but it's something I was a little surprised to see and frankly glad to see. So his projections, including the finish for every division in the NFL and for the AFC South, no surprise. He has the Jaguars on top at 11-6, but second place, your Houston Texans at 7-10, followed by the Titans at 6-10 and the Colts at 4-13. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but to me, 7 wins would be enough. Like, I think we've had conversations like, what does D'Amico need to do year one to keep the momentum going, to keep the confidence and the swagger and all the excitement you had from draft day and from signing him on as your head coach? Sean, is 7 wins, if they get to that number, I mean, obviously you'd want to see Stroud also look good. You can't say only 7 wins gets you there. But does that keep all the excitement and the momentum going into 2024?
Yeah, I mean, if Texans get 7 wins, CJ Stroud's pretty good. Yeah. So I think I would... That would 100%, that would be way above my expectation, or not way above, but I would expect kind of the bright, you know, the bright side to be like 6 wins is like where they're tapping out in that 5-6 win range. If you're saying 7 wins, second place in the AFC South, that would be like probably the best realistic scenario, I'd say, for the Texans. Because like I said, like this isn't a team with that much talent around it where they can kind of get dragged to 7 wins through like defense and running the ball.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
oh no,
point.
CJ Stroud's going to have, you're going to have to throw to win some of these games. And that would, 7 wins would be thrown to win a lot of them.
RJ, how would you feel about a 7 win season?
7 wins would be amazing. I have them at 6.
Isn't that such an indictment over the last couple of years?
Listen, like,
man, 7 wins, amazing.
Seven wins would be great.
David won seven the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 7 wins would be great. And listen, Damian Pierce, you know, when we got into the latter half of the season, said, listen, you know, we were in the same position as Jacksonville was for a lot of their games. We only lost by a score here. Or there was a mistake here. And the only reason why I don't have them going 7 or over 7 wins is because I believe with that statement that Damian Pierce made, you're now saying we have the quarterback that is going to get us over that hump if we're down 3, if we're, you know, down a score. He's going to drive us down the field, give us a 16-play, 80-yard drive that kills, you know, 5 minutes off the clock. I don't know if he's doing that as a rookie, but here's where I do say I could see 6. And potentially what, you know, Will Brinson is saying, 7 wins. You have Lamar Jackson, Trevor Lawrence, Aaron Rodgers, the dead body of Russell Wilson. And you also have, for better or for worse, you don't know what you're going to get, but Deshaun Watson. However, those last two guys that I named and all the other quarterbacks that you have on your schedule, this is not murderer's row, except for, you know, Lamar Jackson, Trevor Lawrence.
Well, you didn't mention Joe Burrow.
We got Joe Burrow.
Yeah, Joe Burrow's a murderer.
And Aaron Rodgers.
Colt McCoy.
Yeah, I mean,
after that, it's who? It's a, you know, of course you're going to have your rookie quarterbacks. Don't even know if Ryan Tannehill's going to be your starter. Maybe they give Will Levis some run. I don't know. Maybe at that second game when you play against Tennessee. So this isn't a tough schedule for the Houston Texans. I think what's going to hurt them is because you have a quarterback that hasn't been in that position yet. When you're playing against other teams that have that veteran leadership or have, you know, a veteran QB, let's say like the New Orleans Saints, and they have the veteran QB and Carr, and he's just able to dink and dunk and able to drive the team down the field. And then you say that's what we hope C.J. Stroud's able to do in a couple of years. So it could be 6 wins, maybe 7 wins. But if it's just strictly 6 wins and you're, you know, tied up with the Titans at the end of the year, you should not be disappointed if you're a Texans fan. That's a really good season as opposed to what you had last year.
Yeah, I mean, like, if C.J. Stroud looks like the right quarterback choice, then you could almost sell me on any amount of win total and I'd be happy, because I would have faith in the future. Now, you couldn't sell me on 1 win,
yeah,
win. Wow. But if they win more games than last year and C.J. Stroud looks good, then you could pretty much sell me on the optimism going forward. So it is interesting. I think after the draft, a lot of the talk on this station and around the city of Houston is – been, oh my God, they gave up their own pick and not the Cleveland pick next year for the trade up for Will Anderson. But if you're going off of these projections from Will Brinson, if they came true, you're talking about the Texans having somewhere between the 8th and 13th pick, because that's what a 7-10 record got you last year. And he also has the Browns at 7-10. So they basically, you'd be within a couple picks of the Browns. You may even be a couple picks better than the Cleveland Browns, depending on how the tiebreakers feel. So I mean, I felt about it okay at the time because I didn't really believe that the Browns are going to be that great. That division's pretty hard. They're at best the third best team in that division behind the Ravens and the Bengals. So further confirmation to me that that's probably not going to be that bad of a deal. When you're looking at these standings and how they break down, Jacksonville 11 wins, Texans at 7 wins, a 4-game difference, it kind of gives me a feeling from the Bill O'Brien 2016 to 2019 era where there was like one good team and everyone else was just – man. Bottom feeders.
What an era.
I mean, well, I'm 4 out of 5. I mean, the AFC South Division champions 2 years in a row, Brian. But, I mean, is that kind of the vibe that you get? Is it Jacksonville and then everyone else? What? And kind of following that up, like, I mean, it's 4-game projected difference. That's a big gap. Like, I mean, how soon can we actually expect the Texans to close that gap?
I think for at least this year, that gap is that big. Because you know, you look at the Texans. Well, they spent the number two pick on a quarterback, on a rookie quarterback. Tennessee Titans picked one in the second round, and the Colts picked one number 4 overall. So
Jacksonville can face 6 rookie quarterbacks just in their own division. Yeah,
they're gonna play a rookie quarterback 6 times. So that to me is the gap right there. They made the playoffs last year. Every other team is kind of either taking a step back or still is only on that first step after, you know, rock bottom, where that's where I'd put the Texans. They're not taking a step back. They're taking a step forward, but they're just so back to begin with, you can hardly tell. That kind of
feels like a dusty thing to say about Michael Brantley's injury. I felt like
it wasn't a step back. Yeah.
It wasn't a go forward, but it wasn't a step back.
No, they'd already, like Michael Brantley, Michael Brantley's progressing with his injury.
Sure.
He'd already taken a setback, but now he's progressing.
He's same progressing thing, again. Okay.
Same thing with the Texans. They already took the step.
We got there.
So, whatever. Jacksonville's going to win this division, guys.
Yeah, it does feel a little anticlimactic. But I do think if they do get to 7 wins, and it sounds like we all agree, there should be signs of optimism there. All right, we got to get to break. RJ Anderson, CBS Sports writer, CBS Sports MLB writer, will join us next. He's at R_J_Anderson. I was telling RJ before the show started, 2 underscores in a Twitter handle. We got to ask him about why he decided to put that in there. That's a lot of nonsense. But don't go anywhere. We'll have RJ Anderson on next. The Bullpen, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonough on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Sports talk in Houston is terrible, except for ESPN 97.5. Never listen to any other station. ESPN 97.5 is not terrible. And that's why I love these guys. Knuckleheads.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, Sean the Dream Mapes, RJ Saunders, myself, Brian McDonald, Josh behind the glass again. Make sure you watch the Twitch stream during breaks. We just found out that Sean's dad tried to turn him into the Dream while he was playing elementary basketball.
I was a tall fourth grader.
He was a tall fourth grader.
I topped out at the exact same height my dad is.
Yeah, shocking, right? All right, enough basketball. Let's get back to baseball. RJ Anderson, CBS sports writer. our CBS Sports MLB writer. You can find him on Twitter at r_j_anderson. RJ, great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's get into, I want to start with kind of a wide topic here with some of these surprising teams here in Major League Baseball. We're looking at the Diamondbacks, the Pirates, and the Marlins all having winning records right now. I think the feeling for most of them is like, okay, the other shoe's going to drop. This isn't for real. But if you had to pick one of these teams that actually is for real and will make a run and possibly get into the postseason, which team do you believe in the most right now?
Of those three, I would say the Diamondbacks. You know, the Marlins, I feel, are a house of cards. You know, they've been really good in one-run games, but that's typically unsustainable, at least to their extent. The Pirates, I mean, they've already started to crater if you look at their performance in the last few weeks. The Diamondbacks, you know, not only do they have a lot of good young talent, you know, be it Corbin Carroll, be it Perdomo, be it even Gabriel Moreno, they also have the ability to upscale that rotation. And, you know, right now they have a lot riding on Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly's start. If they want, they can either promote internally or go out there at the deadline, move some of their organizational depth to upgrade that rotation. And at that point, who knows? Maybe they really do claim a wild card spot and make the postseason for the first time since, I think, 2017.
Yeah, and going kind of to the flip side of that, there are a few teams that have kind of stumbled out of the gates that had expectations. I mean, you look at the Mariners, the Mets, the Phillies, the Padres, all these teams thought that they had a legitimate chance to not just make the playoffs, but win the World Series. All these, I think the Mariners are at 500, or maybe the Mets are at 500. The rest of them are under 500. Which one would you say you have the least amount of faith in?
Oh, the least amount.
Yeah, which one is going to not recover?
You know, I hate to say it, but the Phillies scared me coming into the season just because I felt like people were getting a little over the skis about them, you know, because of the postseason run. And I think that, you know, that's just human nature. A good run in October, and you kind of forgive the sins of the team. And, you know, they don't have a lot of depth. And, you know, we already starting to see that with the rotation, right? They were really counting, I think, on Andrew Painter, one of the best young pitching prospects in the minors, being able to transfer to the majors early in the year and fortify their rotation. And unfortunately for them, he got injured during the spring. You know, Taiwan Walker struggled. They've had some other issues there. And now we're talking about them starting Walker on short rest today and starting Dylan Covey in a few days. And, you know, no offense to Dylan Covey, but that's not really what we envisioned that Philly's rotation to look like at this point in the season. So I would say of those teams, probably have the least confidence in them recovering just because of the depth issues. And because, again, I think maybe we overrated them a little bit heading into the season.
RJ Anderson of CBS Sports joining the bullpen. Seems like a lot is riding on the Los Angeles Angels and how they do this year in order for them to keep Shohei Ohtani. Just with you outside, you know, looking into that Angels organization, do you believe that Shohei will be an Angel next year, or are we seeing him in a different uniform?
I would be very surprised if he's an Angel next season. You know, realistically, I think they would have to make a deep run in the playoffs, almost kind of like what the Phillies did last year for him to re-up. Because if it comes down to money, well, you know, he's going to have the Dodgers and the Mets and the Padres chasing after him. They're all going to be able to spend just as much, if not more, than the Angels. And in the past, he has stated that his desire, his number one desire, is to win a World Series. And this is someone who's put, you know, his mouth ahead of his money, so to speak, because if you look at it, when he came over, he could have waited a few years, then came over and signed a bigger deal. He came over because he really wanted to play in the majors. He really wanted to win a World Series. It cost him a lot of money in the process. I just don't see a scenario where, you know, we reached the end of the season and he says, oh, yeah, you know, the Angels are where I want to be for the next, you know, 10, 11 years or however long his contract ends up being. I really have a hard time envisioning that.
RJ Anderson from CBS Sports joining us here on the bullpen. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, and Brian McDonald. RJ, the Astros have dealt with a lot of injuries for their starting rotation. Lance McCullers, we don't know when he's coming back. Luis Garcia is out for the year, and Jose Urquidy's probably looking like a July return, probably best case scenario. Do you think it's time for the Astros to make a trade for a starting pitcher, or how do you view that rotation and the Astros' needs going into the summer?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to do some kind of trade. Now, you know, the problem is right now is not really a good time to be making a trade. You know, I remember this old saying with Billy Beane. He said the first 2 months are about figuring out what your team has, the next two are about getting what it needs, and the final two are about playing with the team you really wanted. You're the Astros. You certainly don't want J.P. France and Brandon Belak, you know, nothing against them, but you certainly don't want them figuring into your postseason rotation, given that you have World Series hopes. So I think as we get closer to June and into July, you're going to see them connected with a lot of starting pitchers. Now, you know, who might that be? I think you look at that Chicago White Sox rotation and say, well, you know, Giolito would be nice. Cease, if he becomes available. Maybe Lance Lynn, depending on what he does between now and then. Maybe there's a reunion with Zach Greinke. I don't know. Maybe they can also have an outfielder in there as well, depending on how Michael Brantley recovers or if he recovers over the next few months as well.
Yeah, and sticking with the Astros, what to you has been the biggest surprise with this Astros team so far this season?
In terms of positive or negative, because I can give you...
I know the negative, but give me the positive first.
Okay, well, the negative one was going to be Jose Abreu, yeah. Obviously, because I really did not envision him struggling the way he has. For a positive surprise, I guess we could go with... I kind of like Jake Myers and Chas McCormick for what they are. I feel like they don't get a ton of acclaim nationally because, you know, last year's team has been very, very good for a long time and have a lot of star players. So I would give them credit. And from throwing out number one, I guess, DeBom and the way he's really become kind of an elite contact hitter. I think last time I looked, his end zone contact rate was over 90%. This is someone who, before he came to the Astros, was well below that. So whatever they did with his swing and, you know, his approach at the plate has really paid dividends for him. And I know you don't want him starting every day at second base or anything like that. They're glad to have Jose Altuve back. But I thought he gave him a lot more production than I would have expected entering the spring.
What starting pitchers for you, RJ, are out there that may not be on great teams right now, but if there's a team that's on the fringe of making the postseason or maybe a team that where if they were to get a starting pitcher, this would put them over the top and make them real contenders to go to the World Series. Like, who's that guy that's out there that you think is going to be on the move to a contending team?
Yeah, so we're talking for the Astros, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I was making sure I didn't catch that part. But yeah, I mean, I mentioned some of the guys earlier with Cease. I think he's kind of everyone's desire, right? Because we know he has really big stuff. We know he's got the track record. It's just a matter of whether or not the White Sox enter that deep rebuild or not. And I mentioned Giolito. I mentioned Zach Greinke is kind of a sleeper candidate if he decides he wants to be traded, which he may not. You never know. Also, I would go out with Alex Cobb. You know, it depends on what the Giants do the rest of the way. And if you want a really, really, really big dark horse, who I think that, at least in the past, I've heard some of the analytics teams like him more than you would expect. How about Austin Gomber for the Rockies? His numbers are horrible, I know, but there's probably something there if you mix up his pitches a little bit. Maybe have him throw fewer fastballs. And, oh, by the way, you know, most pitchers look better if you get away from Coors Field.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, before he ended up having to have Tommy John surgery, German Marquez was one of the guys I was looking at because his numbers outside of Denver are way better than what you see at Coors Field. RJ Anderson from CBS Sports joining us. One more for you, RJ. Some of the conversation around the Astros starting pitchers in pitching injuries, not Lance McCullers, obviously, but with Luis Garcia and Jose Urquidy, have gone back to the World Baseball Classic. Dusty Baker even mentioned, like, it would be a shame if that was a cause of why we've seen these guys get injured. Those certainly aren't the only guys getting injured coming out of the World Baseball Classic, and it feels like a lot of fan bases and executives and coaches are voicing concern about the format, maybe when it's played, how it's played. I mean, what changes might we see with the World Baseball Classic? Could we see it moved? Could we see it shortened? Or what kind of reaction might we see from Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I think it's tough. I think it's really tough to schedule this and play it in a way where it's going to make everyone happy because, you know, injuries are part of baseball, right? These things could have happened with or without the World Baseball Classic. I know there is study, not including this WBC, but the past ones, and it showed basically a trifling injury effect. So the fact that we had so many high-profile injuries this year was unfortunate because it was a great tournament. But, you know, I've seen people say move it to the All-Star break, but then guys are going to skip it and say, you know, I want to rest up for the postseason run. I've seen people say move it to after the season. Then people are going to be like, well, you know, I just played in the World Series. Why do I want to go sit in the WBC? So I really don't think there's a winning scenario for when you schedule that. as it relates to participation or, you know, avoiding injuries. I think you're just going to have to deal with that as part of the bargain for expanding baseball globally and for tapping into some of these new markets. I mean, you know, look at what Great Britain did, this WBC. They would, you know, they didn't have a serious chance of winning it, but what they did probably did a lot for baseball in that country. And in turn, it'll do a lot for us down the road and some of those great players come from that country that maybe wouldn't have picked up with that otherwise.
RJ Anderson from CBS Sports, their MLB writer, joining us here on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. RJ, appreciate the time. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, and make sure you find him on Twitter. Again, his Twitter handle is r_j_Anderson. Follow his work and all his great writing there on CBS Sports. Coming up next in the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 with Sean Mapes, Brian McDonald, and RJ Saunders, my man Josh behind the glass. Guys, it's time to talk about family. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
You're going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Bank Studios. It's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is the Bullpen. We're here with the producers of ESPN Radio. Myself, Brian McDonald, at Sack by BMAC on Twitter. Sean Mapes, at Sean A. Mapes. RJ Saunders, at R Has No J. And our man Josh, at I Am J Chevy. And guys, we're not talking Rockets. We're not talking Astros. We're not talking Texans here. We're talking family. And that, of course, is in relation to the Fast and Furious 10 movie that just came out. Sean Mapes went and saw it with Pauly G. You can hear them, of course, 10 to noon every Monday through Friday here on ESPN 97.5. Sean, I'll toss it over to you. I've told you before, I've seen one Fast and Furious movie, and it's not even a part of the 10. It was the Hobbs and Shaw movie. I'm not a huge fan, but you, I think on Twitter, I wish I had your exact tweet up, but I believe you called it one of the most satisfying.
Yes, it is the most satisfying theater experience I've ever had. No movie has ever delivered on
that's
exactly
what it was. No movie has ever delivered more than Fast and Furious. That was the line.
What you want when you walk into a movie and you spend? Well, it was we actually saw a 2:30 showing, so it was like, you know, $13 on a ticket, like $15 in popcorn and drink. And you sit down,
nothing to do with Fast and Furious 10. So sometimes the price
you
is
sit
out of
down
control.
$30 in the hole, and you're like, I hope I get $30 worth
hope
of entertainment.
I'm entertained. Yeah,
and man, I probably would have paid. I don't even get into the disgusting amount of money I would have paid.
So the ticket was $13.
Yes.
Would you have paid $25 to go?
I was thinking like $200.
Josh's reaction behind the glass. He's got his hands on
that,
his head.
If this was like the Wu-Tang album that they only made one copy of ever, and they sold it to Martin Shkreli.
Yo, the guy that ripped off everyone in the pharmaceutical world? Yeah.
If Fast and Furious did that, where they just made
would
one... I would have to see what the price is.
Right,
I would have to
Fast
see X. what the price is. And I think I would get outbid, but I'd monitor the situation. I have a bigger appetite for that franchise than most would.
Well, speaking of your appetite for it, I saw a headline on I think it was from Pauly G. It was from a topic you guys had. It was is Fast and Furious franchise better than the Star Wars franchise?
Oh yeah, it is.
Okay, explain yourself.
How many good movies are in the Star Wars franchise?
Like four or five.
Four or five. We're saying like three and a half.
Okay.
We're saying like the first three and
first
the
three.
End of Revenge of the Sith.
I would say first three, then episode seven, the first one and the new one, and then Rogue One.
It was just New Hope.
Yeah, but it was good.
It's the same movie.
I know it's the same movie, but it's a different cast of characters. It's a new time frame.
Okay.
I know kind of beat for beat, they told us very, very
the
similar
exact same story.
But it was good. And New Hope was a good movie.
They tell the exact same story with some of the same cast members.
So I'll say five good movies. I'll throw Rogue One in there, too. I thought that was pretty good as well.
Oh, you know what? I wasn't even thinking about Rogue One. But, you know, Hobbs and Shaw is about as good as Rogue One as far as the non, like, the outside movies. You should watch this segment on Twitch just to see how many times people shake their heads. I just see Josh out of the corner of my eye shaking my head. I see you shaking your head, RJ. Like, I think that, again, no one hates Star Wars movies more than
Star Wars fans.
Yeah. So their fan base hates the movies. The Fast and Furious fan base loves every movie.
So I'll follow up on that.
There's been like two stinkers, but
okay. So there's been 10 movies, plus you have the Hobbs and Shaw movie. So I guess there's 11. How many have you left the theater going, man, that was amazing?
Well, I didn't see 1 and 2 in the theater.
Okay, well, whenever you watch,
yeah, but 1 and 2, phenomenal.
Right.
5, 6, and 7 are absolutely flawless.
Yes,
they're absolutely that I agree. Without flaw.
400-mile runway.
I agree.
Six has one flaw.
It has
the runway from here to San Antonio. Yes, that would be a flaw. But it's only a flaw if you sit down and do the math. If you're just sitting in the theater, like,
who's doing math when they're watching Fast and Furious?
In order to know that it's 400 miles long, you must have watched the movie and been like, wow, they've really been on this runway for a while. They've been on this runway for like 20 minutes.
No, Fast 6 was incredible.
Fast 6 was very good. 5 is the best movie of the franchise. 5 is like, everyone can just sit down and watch 5 and love it.
So
everyone
you named 1, 2, 5, 6, 5, 6 and 7 as can't miss.
Absolutely. Like,
and it sounds like 10 nines and 10s.
Nines and 10s. Okay. And then 8, step back. It was fine. It wasn't awesome. I can't sit here and call them all phenomenal because that would cheapen the ones that really truly are phenomenal. 8 was merely good. Nine was shaky, and that's what Paul and I's mindset was going into 10. We're a little worried about the direction that this franchise was going, much like the Houston Rockets and the Houston Texans.
Way to bring it on back.
We're troubled on where the franchise
sounds like,
is going.
It sounds like 10 was the Victor Wembanyama of the series.
It's like they hired D'Amico Ryans and also got Victor Wembanyama. Yeah. Like, and also signed every free agent. It was phenomenal.
So I saw that this is the first part of like a 3-part movie ending to the franchise. Yep. Are you prepared for that? For this to end
sometime in 2025? 6 years from now, Fast and Furious 11 is set to arrive, according to Vin Diesel.
Yeah. No. I think
it feels like at this point this is something you could pass down to your future kids, but they're going to end it. I mean, I thought they were about family.
Paul Walker's daughter is literally in.
Is she really?
Yeah, she's like been going on like that long? a small role. But
I think when the first movie came out, this is how long ago it was. I was working at a Hollywood Video as a teenager. Hollywood Video no longer around. I don't think Josh even knows what a Hollywood Video is. It was like Blockbuster, but worse, Josh. That's what it was.
2001.
Yeah, 2001. I think the company went out of business in like 2003 or something like that. But yeah, I didn't
make it to Too Fast, Too Furious.
No, I don't think they did. But I remember the VHSs coming back and just record amount of time and having to turn those around because no one rewound. I don't know if you guys remember this, but no one rewound. We always had the sign, be kind, rewind. Yeah. No one did. Uh-huh. No one did. So your guy over here was in charge of rewinding those tapes a lot. I saw a lot of those cassette tapes come in back there in 2001.
But I can't get over that you've never. You're sitting here judging. You think it's ridiculous that
I do. See, I feel okay.
I'm a ridiculous person. No, what you think.
I'll tell you what it is. I feel like backed into a corner now, because like when the franchise started, it's like, oh, that's stupid. Like I don't want to see that. And then as it's gone on, it's like, that's actually probably something I would enjoy, but I almost feel backed into a corner.
Okay, you know what?
I told you before,
100% respect that move.
I love Jason Statham movies. I love The Rock, and that's why I saw Hobbs and Shaw. And if I enjoy things like Crank 2 and Death Race and The Transporter, and I love those movies.
Transport is awesome.
Yeah, of course. because Jason Statham's awesome. There's no reason I wouldn't enjoy the Fast and the Furious movies, but I'm just kind of backed into a corner at this point. I'll eventually give in and tell nobody, but until that
No, you have to. Very rarely, I think I've told you this before, very rarely do I evangelize for things. Movies, TV shows, because I hate it when people are like, you gotta watch a show. It's on the streaming service that you have to get a free 7-day trial. So just sit down 1 week and then you cancel.
Bro, have you watched the Dahmer series?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'll watch what I want to watch, all right? Fast and Furious, must watch.
Where does the Fast and Furious franchise, where does this rank all time? Like, is it a top five franchise?
And you already said it's better than Star Wars.
Yeah, it's better than Star Wars.
Is it better than the Marvel Universe?
Like
starting with Iron Man in 2008.
The numbers game is so. I would say.
Yeah, they have way. Obviously, Marvel has way more movies. I'll say that, like 25 or 27 or whatever it is.
That is tough. I would say there's like more sustained like highs. You know, because like with the Marvel universe, or the Marvel movies, there's like, you know, they really only peaks with like Avengers movies and then like the odd.
Yeah, it's gone through a little bit of a funk recently, but the Guardians movie was fantastic.
Yeah,
the newest one that came out a couple weeks ago.
Where as far as like you're just, in a funny way, it's like there's only been 10 Fast and Furious movies, whereas there's been 30 Marvel ones.
Yeah, there's been a lot.
So if we just wanted to go like, if we wanted to go what?
It's better than Lord of the Rings. I saw you scrolling past this.
Well, okay, so Harry Potter.
Oh well,
look, I'm just reading off. Harry, you got Harry Potter. You got the Oceans franchise. The Batman franchises.
Batman franchise is not even a franchise. It's not a franchise. It's like 10 different franchises. Yeah.
Okay, how about the Rocky franchise?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Probably better.
I like the Creed movies. I mean, just go recently. The three Creed movies or Fast and Furious franchise.
The Terminator franchise?
Okay. I think you're going too far back, RJ.
Is that too far back, the Terminator franchise?
I mean, it started like 89.
That's
was
another
the first
one.
One.
That started in 84.
That's another one where there's like three good movies.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they make a new one every 7 years.
Okay, so you love the Fast and Furious movie, but you saw another movie this weekend that was not quite as good. What'd you also watch?
Oh, I also watched White Men Can't Jump, starring don't say go to break.
Don't throw us to break where we're talking about can't.
I needed to call it a break right there and then. I've had enough of this.
I'll just say Vince Staples, probably the best actor in that movie.
So it's not a ringing endorsement there. It's not a reason to get Hulu if you don't already have it.
He's pretty good, but he's like the fifth most important character in the movie.
Okay, so that's not great. All right, fine, Josh. We'll go to break. You don't want to talk about White Man Can't Jump. I feel attacked, but whatever. All right, well, we've got a white man myself. Yeah, I know. I feel attacked.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. I'm not going to go off on some soapbox here. All right, we got one segment left in the show, The Bullpen, ESPN Radio, 97.5 and 92.5. Sean Mapes, Brian McDonald, and RJ Saunders, our man Josh behind the glass. As we do in our last segment every week, we'll talk about the worst person in sports this week, plus the things we love from sports this week. That's all next on ESPN Radio. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is The Bullpen with Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald here, our man Josh behind the glass. And the conversation on Fast and Furious did not end during the commercial break.
I will not be silenced.
No, you will not be silenced. You described one of the greatest cinematic scenes I've ever heard of, where I believe you said Vin Diesel and Jason Statham were fighting in a parking garage that was collapsing around them. And what was the line again, Sean, for the people listening home?
Vin Diesel looks at Jason Statham and he goes, you know, the thing about a street fight is, and then he slams his foot down on the like one single crack that's on this parking garage and goes, the street always wins.
He brings down the entire
structure. And then the structure. Yes, and then it crumbles around.
That is fantastic. Like if you It really has become a superhero franchise. That will not be in the things I hate this week, because that line is amazing.
I'd walk out.
Only got 10 minutes left. I mean, we wouldn't be much of a walkout. I would pick your spots a little bit better. But anyway, let's get into the things we hated from sports this week, the worst people in sports this week. And I'll start off with the cheating-ass Yankees. For all the Yankees fans who love to cry about made up buzzers and trash cans, even though they were stealing signs at the exact same time. It's been a rough week for those fans, even though they'll probably not admit it. And for the record, I don't think Aaron Judge was cheating, but the answer he gave for why he was looking to the side in a game against the Blue Jays was just total BS to me. If you didn't see it, he's facing the Blue Jays, and he keeps throughout the entire game just kind of glancing to the side with his eyes towards, I guess it would be to his right, right before the pitch comes. And his answer after the game was, oh, well, you know, my teammates were griping at the umpire for bad calls, and, you know, our manager Aaron Boone just got kicked out, and I just wanted to see who was griping because I wanted to be able to talk to him afterwards. First off, you can't sell me that Aaron Judge could actually see his bench with that minor glance. Second, even if he was trying to look at his teammates there, I mean, you're talking about seconds before the pitch is thrown. You're looking at your teammates to see who's yelling? No. What happened was they probably picked up a tell with how the Blue Jays were shifting in their defensive alignment, the first baseman, the second baseman, whoever, where if it was a breaking ball coming, they were positioning themselves one way. If it's a fastball, they were positioning themselves other way from whatever the expected outcome for Aaron Judge would be against that pitch. And there's no problem with that. If you pick up a tell like that, or if a pitcher's tipping pitches like the Rays did with the Astros years ago with the glove placement.
Tyler Glasnow.
Yeah. There's no problem with that. But, I mean, come on. Don't tell me that, oh, I was looking at my teammates griping. And then to follow that up, you had Domingo Germán get kicked out of the game because he had sticky stuff. And then somehow Clark Schmidt also had sticky stuff on his hands, but they allowed him just to wash it off, and he stayed in the game. So any Yankees fans who like to take the high horse against the Astros, the high road, and pretend like they're holier than thou, no, you've been caught cheating three times this week, and you were cheating back when the Astros were cheating, so shut your mouth. Sean, who was the worst person in sports this week, besides the cheating Yankees?
Okay, and I can open my mouth.
Yeah, you can open your mouth.
You really did drop Yankee. The Carlos Correa, if you don't know the facts.
Yeah, I didn't do the full quote.
My worst thing in sports this week, and I'm really, really, it involves a sport, but it's not really professional in any way. There's news that they're opening a basketball version of Top Golf.
I saw that, yeah.
Called Jump Shot Live.
Like, I mean, you can't take a date there, right? You're gonna be sweating your ass off.
You can't do anything there. You can tear your ACL there. That's all.
Like, that's what I would do.
There's gonna have to be an entire like medical wing to this. Every single location that they make, there's gonna have to be a medical wing because someone's like plantar fasciitis
the thing I kept thinking of, like, who's the target demo for this? Like, because you're not taking dates out there. You're not going to sweat your ass off.
I was going
to
say.
Is it Josh? But people who really like the ball are just going to go to the gym, right? They're not going to go to this. You're not going to stick around and, what, eat and drink $10 beers afterwards or beforehand and then ball?
Well,
I mean.
Well, Josh.
Josh, explain yourself. Are you all into this?
Man, you're telling me on a Friday night I can go to get open bar service and hit jump shots and go 5 for 23 from the field?
Man, you're going to be throwing up so fast, chugging beers, and then trying to throw up jump shots?
Oh, my God. That sounds like that's an out-of-body experience right there for me.
I could see myself going once, but I am just imagining how much I would sweat after eating wings and drinking beer and then trying to play defense.
Oh, there would be no defense. It'd be the NBA All-Star game. Yeah,
it'd be a layup line. Steph Curry range up in there. I swear to God.
It's all jump shots and layups and that. RJ, are you into that?
Heck no, man. Listen, either if we're going to do that, basically you're just making like a Dave and Buster's where you could do the Papa shot and you're going to have alcohol right next to you. Just keep it coming. Or, like me, just go to the gym or go to the local park. And then after, you can go to your local bar and have drinks and watch the game or whatever. Like, don't know. This I don't see how.
I will say the Papa shot. I do wish that, you know, instead of just the Papa shot, I could, you know, actually, you know, go down to the left block and really do some Kevin McHale up and unders on people. Hey, so,
Kevin McHale,
the people
you were, I you were, see, you bring were the al- once and future dream. I mean, I think you're selling yourself short there with Kevin McHale.
People I see bring alcohol to a local park. I mean, over my days of playing basketball, where they just bring alcohol to the park. I mean.
Well, that's usually because they're sleeping there as well.
Yeah, Jack Harlow.
Not always, but all right, I do get your worst person.
Jack Harlow did that in White Men Can't Jump.
See, Josh, you can't stop the White Men Can't Jump conversation. You tried to cut it off, but it's coming back.
Don't make me play Will Smith up in here to end the show real fast.
I encourage it. Can I encourage some, it. That needs to be a new Jack Bullpen Harlow? Weekly tradition. RJ, who is your worst person in sports this week?
My worst person.
Besides Jack Harlow.
My worst person in sports this week. It's actually a two-edged sword here because D'Angelo Russell has completely disappeared for the Los Angeles Lakers. And
I think we need some sad music.
I know we don't, because there's actually going to be some horror music here, because now Lakers Twitter, it seems like it's now time to open the door for a guy that's currently in Dallas to now just make his way to Los Angeles.
What, Kyrie?
Luka Doncic? Oh.
And play for the Lakers. And I, no, stay there, stay back.
He's not staying there.
Get
he's
back.
Around his way around every team.
Don't
know.
And it seems like people are already talking themselves into Kyrie Irving being a Laker because of the disappearing act of D'Angelo Russell. Stop shooting jump shots after every game because you've gone 4-for-11, 3-for-8, and 1-for-8. Just hit a damn jump shot when it counts. However, I think the Lakers probably losing 5 here, so it's not going to matter anyway. But no Kyrie for me.
You could have just said the Lakers lose. You didn't have to say probably in 5. Probably. I mean, we know it's over, right, RJ? I mean, it's 3-0.
Listen, to go from 2-10 to the Western Conference Finals.
No, it's a hell of a year still.
Can't bet my eye.
Yeah,
it's a hell of a year. All right, let's be done with the anger sharks. Swim over to the Sea of Tranquility and talk about the things we love from sports this week. I'm going to start off with something that happened. Sorry, had a John Granato moment there. At least I think I got my microphone off. But anyway, the Washington Commanders obviously being sold to the owner of the 76ers and the New Jersey Devils, Josh Harris. And as a result, a AA affiliate of the Baltimore Orioles, the Bowie Bay Sox, are having promotions to celebrate the removal of Daniel Snyder. They're giving $10 box seats to, this was I guess last Thursday's game, to anyone named Josh or Harris, and they're also serving out birthday cake as a celebration for Daniel Snyder leaving. So that is my favorite thing from sports this week. Sean, what was the thing you love from sports this week?
Jimmy Butler. Need I say more?
No, Tom Ball's own.
Jimmy Butler. He's awesome.
For me, I never got to see the River City Rumble. I heard a lot of the River City Rumble baseball and basketball in Jacksonville, UNF versus JU, and did it a lot while I was at 1010 because I had to produce the programs for the one and only Scott Manzi.
0-1 pitch, hit high and deep, out and on left field, this one back.
For the cycle! For the cycle!
Blake DeLommeler with the first known cycle in Jacksonville baseball history, and it's a walk-off one here in the final game of the regular season.
What a great moment.
I love that they said known cycle because they just have been like, man, we're not going to research to see if this is the first cycle that we've had. We're like, I don't want to put that
Scott
Manzi is
an extraordinaire. I'm pretty sure like he would have known, but I mean, he's been there forever. But to hear that call, just absolutely
all right.
Amazing.
Getting jiggy with it is playing, so that means we got to get out of here. For Sean Mapes, for RJ Saunders, for Josh Behind the Glass, I've been Brian McDonald. Thank you for listening to The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We'll be back next Sunday, 10 to noon, here on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Sports. ESPN 97.5.